Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's practically become the stuff of legend now. Back in 1999, then-Representative Bernie Sanders declared he'd be taking busloads of senior citizens from Vermont up north of the border to Canada, where they could purchase their prescription medication at a fraction of the cost of what they were paying in the U.S. Nearly a decade later, the U.S. is still dealing with the high cost of prescription drugs. So the Vermont legislature passed a bill this year that wouldn't require patients to hop on the bus, but would get drugs from Canada into the hands of Vermonters. The bill, S-175, calls for Vermont to import certain prescription medications from a wholesaler in Canada. Either the state would act as a wholesaler itself or contract out with another wholesaler to then distribute those medications to pharmacies around the state, where you would then access your prescription, as you might already do. But while the law has already been passed, it's not in effect yet. And it requires a waiver from the federal government to move forward. That waiver is not guaranteed. Senator Claire Eyre is a Democrat from Addison County. In her 8 years in the Vermont legislature, she's worked on health care issues ranging from single payer to mental health care reforms. And as chair of the Senate Health and Welfare Committee, she was one of the primary sponsors of S-175. She joins us today to help us iron out the details. Welcome to the program. Nice to talk with you again.
Nice to see you, Jane.
What was the impetus for this? I mean, I mentioned that we've been dealing with high costs of prescription drugs, as everybody knows, for a very long time. But why the push to find a new way and find it through Canada?
Sure. Well, I've been in the legislature for 14 years, and even as a member of finance, we're always looking at the high cost of health care. And in the last few years, especially in the teens, 2013, 14, 15, the cost of drugs has gone up 12, 13, 14%. It's going down a little bit, but it's very, very high right now. And we're always looking for ways to provide healthcare at a better price, good healthcare.
And so this idea of finding a way to import drugs from Canada, this is something that there's a national organization that's actually been working on and working with states to try to come up with how to do this. And it's the National Academy for State Health Policy, also called NAHPP. Mm-hmm. And I understand that that organization basically has been giving states draft legislation to use as, you know, here's one way to do it. And so you've been working with NAHPP to sort of get this crafted for Vermont?
Right. We started working with NAHPP with there are several other senators on the bill. We started working with NAHPP last summer. There are a lot of groups that help legislators with expertise in the matter who help legislators with whatever bill, whether it's about automobiles or water quality or, in this case, prescription drugs. But it's based very closely on existing federal legislation that's been around for 10 or 12 years, but nobody's used it.
So how exactly would it work? Let's go over the details because, again, this is passed into law. The governor signed it, mm-hmm. but we do still need a federal waiver. So it's not like it's happening right now. But let's just go through some of the ways that this will work. So the basics.
Sure. I've been corrected, and that is we need to be certified by the secretary. It's not really a waiver to existing law because existing law says we can do it. At the federal level, there's legislation. It was the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. It was about 10 years old. And it says that the secretary of the agency, the federal secretary, and that's Azar, I think is his name right mm-hmm. now, can authorize such a program if it meets certain standards. And it's very rigid criteria about safety, no risk, no additional risk to people of the United States, and cost. We have to save a lot of money. We have to make sure it's safe. And there are a number of details like track and trace and so on. The secretary is also allowed not only to certify us, but to supervise the program. So you have to have the plan in place with all of the safeguards, all of the what ifs taken care of. You submit it to the feds. In this case, it would be our secretary of the Agency of Human Services, would submit it to the feds, and they say, why, yes, we'd love it if you do that. And then we get to implement it within 6 months. So it's a year's timeline.
All right. Well, let's look at that question of whether that's actually going to happen. So as I said, earlier this month, Governor Phil Scott actually signed the bill.
Yes.
And it does, as you say, allow the Agency of Human Services to start drafting this plan and then seek this federal approval. So here's what Governor Scott said.
We're going to do our best to make sure that the Agency of Human Services does their due diligence in trying to accomplish that. Not sure what the outcome's going to be, but we'll do the best we can.
Well, when he says he's not sure what the outcome will be, that's partly because this now rests in the hands of the federal government once it's, you know, sent to them. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely not a done deal. You mentioned that Health and Human Services Secretary's name is Adam Azar, and he has not said specifically what he plans to do about Vermont. But here's a speech that he gave on May 11th discussing several HHS initiatives that he's working on under the Trump administration to try to bring down the high cost of drugs. And I think it's safe to say that he is not a fan of these plans.
Many people may be familiar with proposals to give our seniors access to cheaper drugs by importing drugs from other countries, such as Canada. This, too, is just a gimmick. It's been assessed multiple times by the Congressional Budget Office, and they've said it would have no meaningful effect. Canada's drug market is simply too small to bring down prices here. They're a lovely neighbor to the north, but they're a small one. Canada simply doesn't have enough drugs to sell them to us for less money, and drug companies won't sell Canada or Europe more just to have them imported here. You can't improve competition and choice in our drug markets with gimmicks like these.
That's HHS Secretary Adam Azar in a speech on May 11th. What do you think about his arguments there?
Well, I think like most people, he said that we've looked at it and he implied that we've tried it before. Remember, those were individuals going either driving across or going through websites and ordering from any number of companies. It really wasn't regulated. There was a lot of opportunity. We don't know for sure that any of it ever happened for drugs not to be top quality or for there to be fraud. People were on their own and they might not even know it if that had happened. So that's one thing. People think of that old program of Bernie taking a bus across the border as what we're talking about. In this case, it's highly regulated. His second issue about Canada not having enough drugs, I can see that. They're a really small company, but we're a really small state. We're the size of a small city, 625,000 people. So this, I mean, if there were an ideal combination, I think it would be Vermont and Canada. And his third point was that I'm not sure he said this exactly, but he didn't think pharmaceutical companies would be supportive. Mm-hmm. He might have said something a lot more negative than that. And certainly that would not be surprising. One of the things in our bill is that the secretary, attorney general will look for anti-competitive behavior. It would be this sort of thing. I know you're having a pharmacist on later on. He might have more descriptive terms for those, but looking for them to forbid the sales from one wholesaler to another. And in fact, in China prosecuted a bunch of their big pharmaceutical companies for doing such a thing. So I'm hoping if China is that rigid with their manufacturing, that maybe we can just hold a candle to it at least.
So you think that drug companies will still continue to sell to Canada in the same way that they have the contracts now with the National Health Service in Canada, and Vermont will then be able to buy at that rate and import them, and that this isn't going to somehow, you know, blow up in our faces?
It could work well. It could blow up in our faces. What we're looking at is if the prices that we've looked at so far, and remember, when we look at these drugs, there are limited kinds of drugs. We're not going to
Tell us about a couple of the drugs, because there are rules.
Yeah, we're not going to do any of the scheduled drugs, narcotics, stimulants, that sort of stuff. Anything that would be illegal outside of a medical setting. We're not going to do biologics, which are living cells. They're very hard to replicate, and the testing for that would be too difficult. We're not going to do, they're called specialty drugs. Those are the kinds of things for rare diseases or often require very special patient monitoring, that sort of thing, special handling. These will be brand name drugs. We're also not doing generics because, in fact, the United States has better or at least equal prices, generally speaking, on generics. So it's a small – so that really Blue Cross Blue Shield said that out of their top 10 sellers, 6 or 8 of them were these specialty drugs, and we wouldn't be doing that. But we're spending millions and millions of dollars on that other group for things like diabetes, high blood pressure, lung disease. Depression was a big one. I was surprised to hear that. Those are the kinds of drugs that a lot of people take, and they can be very expensive. That's what we'll be looking at. And when we compared, we got a list from the state employees group of some of their top drugs, and It's very unscientific, but we basically went through the list until we found crossover for the names between the Canadian FDA and where they post prices and the prices that we saw. And we took the top four drugs for cholesterol, and the price paid by VHI, by their insurance company, was 22.9% of the list price. Now, that's really unscientific, but if you could even save 30%, we're talking about hundreds of millions. So it is a risk of time, maybe $125,000, $150,000, but for potentially big payoff.
And let's bring another guest into the conversation here. Jeff Hochberg is the president of the Vermont Retail Druggists Association. That's the lobbying action group for Vermont pharmacies and pharmacy owners, and he joins us now. Hi, Jeff. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
So your organization, do you approve of this law? Do you like it? Do you hope it moves forward?
Yeah, we do. It's a step. The web of intricacies that I think hinder our healthcare system today have, they've grown immense, and this is a good step forward. And I think, above all, it's going to help enlighten us as to the different players, how they their roles they play, and how we can seize opportunities where we can. So, yeah.
So Senator Ayer just mentioned, you know, there's no guarantee here that it will save money, but she thinks it's worth a shot, a small risk for a potentially large payout. And it sounds like you also think whether it winds up saving money or not, there's actually some good that could come of just going down this road.
Yes. Yeah. There's no harm in trying this. It does stand to be a lot to be gained if it does prove to be fruitful. I think a lot of stakeholders recognize the various complexities that are. There's certainly a lot more than just a certificate from the federal level, from CMS. I think Senator Ayer mentioned how wholesalers and manufacturers, how their relationship goes about, and how that carries on to pharmacies, all the different rules about drug supply chain. I mean, all the safety issues are really not relevant. There certainly are counterparts on the Canadian side. And quite frankly, most of those drugs are manufactured here, or we purchase from the same manufacturer. So sourcing the products is one thing, and at the very least, what we're going to be able to see is, let's get some real data behind what it costs them versus what it costs us. And why is the discrepancy? Let's peel back the onions, as you know, all the layers of the onion of what it goes into drug pricing today.
Senator Ayer, when you talked about or when you were crafting this bill to make sure that there would be a way to follow the drug back to its source, how do you account for that in the legislation? How do you make sure that there will be a way to sort of trace where the medication came from?
Well, it's actually in the federal legislation, and we have to meet all of those standards. It's called track and trace.
Right.
And Jeff can correct me if I have the terms wrong, but in the United States, we have a sort of a barcode or some sort of a system of coding that we use. The Canadians have one that's parallel but not the same, and there'll have to be an interface there so we can be sure that the A drug that becomes B drug here had some documentable path in between.
And that's yet to be sort of figured out, what that little mechanism is to make sure that there's that carryover from the Canadian system to the U.S. system?
Sure. But in life, we do that in a number of ways. So that can be figured out. And that's part of the work of it.
So, Jeff Hochberg, when you talk to other pharmacy owners and pharmacists, and I should mention you're not a pharmacist yourself, but you own some pharmacies and you've worked in pharmacies for your whole life, does this seem like something that will actually change the way pharmacies operate in any way? I mean, is there any noticeable difference in your operations depending on whether these drugs are being imported from Canada or not?
No, I don't think it's going to impact pharmacies one way or another at this point. We're talking such a small number of drugs that we're not going to see much going on. I think you start to get into the weeds there when we talk about how pharmacies acquire drugs from wholesalers, all the federal rules are around that, becoming a wholesaler ourselves. All of those things impact, but when it actually comes down to it, if the drug comes from here or there, it really wouldn't matter. Honestly, it's going to help expose that. It's going to help say that, you know, where the drug comes from, how much it costs, and then how much your insurance is going to pay for it, how whether the drug is covered under your formulary or not. And that's what affects consumers directly and quite frankly, most pharmacies. So the interplay of all the different stakeholders is going to come into question by going down this road, and that's what we need to uncover, and we need to find better opportunities.
Let's go to Sue, who's calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Sue. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. My concern would be that if this bill needs public support, that people might not get behind it in that they have perhaps a low copay for their medications. But the connection needs to be made with how the price of pharmaceuticals increases their premiums and their copays and their deductibles and so on. And that's all. That's my comment. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Sue, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing from you. And, you know, this bill has passed, so it's not like it's going to be derailed in the legislature. But I have to admit that it seemed to sort of fly under the radar a little bit this year, Senator Ayer, and there's been a lot going on. But it's interesting because prescription drugs have been such a big problem. You'd think this would be really at the forefront of everybody's mind. And this bill did sort of, you know, slide through, and now we're figuring it out. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. We thought it was going to be that people were going to be so excited. They'd be calling us and saying, great idea. Or they'd be calling and saying, what are you kidding? We're worried about foreign drugs, even though what we take is mostly from the same market. I'm not sure. And maybe it's because of the administration's remarks or specifically the Secretary of HHS, that people are skeptical that it would ever be permitted under federal law. And that is the condition under which we can go forward. But Sue is right. I did the math in a sort of a third of all of our drugs, and it was $300 million. You know, look, that's huge. So we have a lot to gain from this, and the insurance rates would go down, our taxes would go down that support schools and retired teachers' rates and teachers' health care. I mean, it just spills over into so many areas. But to get back to what Jeff said, and what I think Susan was talking about, a part of this bill is that it has to be publicized. The list of the 10 or the 15 will be readily available where you buy your drugs, for your pharmacist to see, your doctors, or to go online. And you'll know if you're always on Crestor, which is a high lipid drug, that you could get it for $17 instead of $65. And then you have to figure out the copays. But there actually has, in another bill, in S-92, we put the anti-gag order bill. Pharmacists weren't allowed to tell you that your copay was actually more than the cost of the drug. Hmm. Or that you could buy a generic drug that would do the same thing for less than the copay. So that'll be a consumer-level choice at that point, whether you want to build in your copays or your deductibles, it would be in this case, or not.
So you could say, I don't want the one from Canada. I want the Lipitor that hasn't been imported from Canada.
Oh, well, you don't know that the Lipitor hasn't been imported from Canada, because remember, 80% of the ingredients of drugs that are made in the United States come from other countries, especially China and India. So, and 40% of the drugs that are sold here in the United States, these are prescription drugs, are made in other countries already.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, a third of the Canadian manufacturers are licensed to sell in the United States. So this is not anything new, not at all. And people don't realize where their drugs come from, especially generics.
But if people are concerned under this bill, if I go in and I'm on a prescription medication and I see that chart, and could I say, no, give me the more expensive one that hasn't gone through this system?
Well, you can now. You can either get generic or
I mean, specifically like Lipitor. Do I get to say, give me the one that didn't come from Canada?
That hasn't been ironed out. That really hasn't been ironed out. I did read an article in the LA Times about a fellow who had generic blood pressure medication. He called his pharmacist to see where it's from. She said, it's mostly from India. And he said, I don't want that. So in this, he said, I want something made in the United States. So he got another drug, and 80% of the ingredients are from China, but that doesn't You don't see that on the label. So that would be an insurance company decision how you get to spend their money if you're covered by insurance. If it's out of pocket, you can do whatever you please.
Well, yeah. Good thing in a little while we'll be talking with a representative from one of the insurance companies in Vermont. And we're looking at this plan to import certain medications. The exact list hasn't been ironed out. That's part of the plan, is to figure out exactly which drugs, which brand name drugs would be imported from Canada. Also still to be figured out, how much could this actually save the state and save insurance companies and save you as a patient? Let's go to Carl, who's calling in from Essex, New York. Hi, Carl. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. A couple of comments here. Regarding Canada being a small country and not having much access or production of drugs, they are a member of the British Commonwealth. And my experience is we ordered an anti-asthma drug, an inhaler, for our cat, which is the same as is used with humans. And interestingly, we got two for less than the price of one, cheapest price that the other half could find on the internet was $150. We got two from New Zealand, made in Australia, by a company called Allen and Hanbury's, who interestingly is a division of GlaxoSmithKline. Same name, not a generic, same everything, $110 or $20 for two when it was $150 for one that we could find. So I'm not sure, and again, that is the same drug that's used with a human that has asthma. I don't intend to, I think it's Flixetide. Their fluticasone is another name for it. I don't know which one is the generic and which one is the marketed name. But that is from a company in Canada that you can access through the web, or you can access through a toll-free number. So I don't know if we could have done that for ourselves. If one of us, we had to have a prescription, that prescription had to be passed on to the eventual pharmacy in New Zealand, I'm assuming, and it was shipped directly to my post office box.
Carl, it's so interesting. So, you know, I've had a similar experience with a pet medication that was the same as a human medication, costs a lot less if you just put dog on the label. So what about what Carl is saying, Senator Ayer?
Well, I've heard of that, and I don't have any comment about buying medication for pets or, you know, for your pets from someplace else. But speaking for myself and a lot of people I know, I would be much less comfortable doing that for my children or my spouse. And the beauty of this program is it doesn't leave it to the individual to do that research. In the past, we've had these other programs, iSaveRx. I went on the internet last night and looked and found a handful of them. And it really is between the consumer and an unknown pharmacist or pharmacy benefit manager. And you're kind of on your own checking these drugs. You have no way of checking their pedigree and where they've been, sort of their custody, the chain of custody of the drugs. So having a state organize that and be able to test periodically would be the difference. It would be, there would be a lot more assurance that you're getting exactly what you're supposed to be getting.
Yeah, Jeff Hochberg, what do you think?
Yeah, when you talk about pet veterinarian medicines, it brings up a good point about proprietary names and brand names. A lot of vet meds are the same meds that you or I would take, marketed under a different brand name. And typically with those brand names comes added cost. So actually, more often than not, veterinary medicines are actually more than human medications because the human medication is generically available and there's a low-cost generic out there. But so you have both sides of the coin. It happens. It can be cheaper. It can be more. It depends. But it goes to the point of these proprietary relationships and financial dealings between manufacturers, their subsidiaries, the insurance and the PBMs, most particularly, about what drug is right for you, the consumer, and the patient. Pharmacists have little say in that these days, and that's something that we've been advocating for, putting the pharmacist more in that center role of making the right choice for you on your behalf, because we know what's out there, what's cheap, and what's effective. And when these companies come in and have these back-end contract dealings, you get all kinds of rebate structures and use this over that, and savings gets very that's where it gets lost. That's where our healthcare system breaks down, is between these, you know, the actual healthcare delivery and the proprietary relationship of business dealings. And that's what I think S-175 is actually going to help, you know, expose. It's going to help bring to light that, why is this drug that comes from the same manufacturer cheaper over there than it is over here? What's going on with that? Why? And that's what we need to answer. That's what we need to fix.
So from your perspective as a, you know, a pharmacy owner, it doesn't benefit you if a customer, if a patient, if an insurance company is paying more for the medication. That doesn't help your bottom line in any way?
If the insurance company pays more for our medication, no. Let me phrase that correctly. What affects our bottom line from a pharmacy perspective is how much the drug costs us from the wholesaler. So we have to purchase the drug directly from them and then hope for reimbursement from the pharmacy benefit manager, who then charges the insurer, who then charges the patient. All of that is this cycle that we have very little control over. It's a take it or leave it contract with a PBM. You sign in, here's what you're going to get paid. And prices change daily. They could reimburse you $10 one day for a drug and then reimburse you $5 the next. So it's out of our control. The only thing we can control is where we buy the drug from, which wholesaler we choose to buy from. And if the state were to have access to a drug that could be cheaper, more or less expensive from a wholesale perspective, great. That would help. But most likely, the insurance companies would then just lower their reimbursement rate.
Senator Ayer?
And just to point out, as Jeff knows, this arrangement of the state of Vermont or their designated wholesaler buying a small set of very, very expensive drugs, that would be posted. Everybody would know what it is, but it'd be willing buyers. No one's going to be forced to buy this, and we'll see how it goes.
You know, a lot of the voices that we're hearing today and a lot of the voices in Vermont are very supportive of this legislation. But I want to bring another voice into the conversation here, because it's perhaps a little illuminating to see what happened in Utah. Eric Newman is a health reporter for KUER Public Radio in Salt Lake City, and he covered the Utah state legislature's efforts to institute a similar prescription drug importation program in that state. And it didn't fly. Eric Newman, welcome to Vermont Edition. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the plan actually passed the House earlier this year, but it failed in the state Senate. So what were the arguments against this kind of plan that sank the legislation?
A lot of the arguments seem to be coming from pharmaceutical lobbyist groups here in Utah. There wasn't a lot of conversation from the legislators themselves about their opposition, although some of them did kind of echo some of the things that these lobbying organizations mentioned, and those concerns were that this is going to encourage people to buy drugs off the internet from Canada that could be expired, could be counterfeit, could just be the wrong drugs entirely. And so it's going to kind of set people up here for the possibility of getting unsafe medications.
Was that a red herring? I mean, the legislation in Vermont certainly doesn't encourage that, but was the argument at least being made that this would just suggest to consumers, hey, get your drugs from somewhere else? I mean, how did those two things square, given the legislation was to act like a wholesaler?
Well, I think maybe part of the reason that it wasn't totally convincing to the legislature was that they were really trying to establish this pipeline. The specific ways that they were going to do that was not quite set up yet. Mm. So I think then those groups that opposed this legislation sort of jumped on that and said, look, this is the risk that could be out there. And then the advocates of this bill didn't really have a defense for that, because, you know, part of the nature of the bill was to figure out how to do it.
Setting this up was likely to cost Utah more money than it would cost Vermont. NASHP reported that it would cost about $517,000 for a feasibility study, and then potentially up to $1.5 million to implement the program. Was that a concern, do you think, for the legislature?
The cost of the program didn't come out during the debate that was happening in the House that I can recall. It seemed like overall, they were talking about the huge savings that this kind of a bill would create for consumers. So, and Medicaid is a huge cost to the state here. So I think overall, the idea here was to target 15 to 20 different drugs. They didn't have specifics about the names, but there's Utah is a very fiscally conservative state. And so I think the opportunity to save money through the Medicaid program and through state employee health insurance programs was kind of the main topic of conversation. Costs to the state didn't really come out nearly as much.
Was there any public outcry or any public anything when this didn't go through? I mean, are people in Utah hoping for something similar to this passing, or did it sort of fly under the radar?
It kind of did fly under the radar. Similarly, it sounds like, to what happened in Vermont, which does seem kind of strange given that this is such a huge issue for people that are having to use these expensive drugs. I think maybe part of it maybe part of the fate of this bill was that the messaging wasn't totally understandable for consumers, because, again, we're talking about 15 to 20 unnamed drugs. The only example that I could recall was insulin, which is not a hugely expensive drug, but still pretty expensive for people to have to use it regularly. So I think if the specifics about what those drugs were to have been included, that may have gotten more of the public on board about it. But it did sort of fly under the radar. And I think that maybe that lack of messaging sort of allowed some of its critics to come out and pick it apart a little bit.
That's Eric Newman, a health reporter for KUER Public Radio in Salt Lake City, Utah. Eric, I really appreciate your perspective and sharing what happened in Utah. Thanks.
Thank you.
We're talking about Vermont's plan to import prescription drugs. Jeff Hochberg, before we let you go, and anything else that you think is important for consumers to know as this moves forward in the implementation phases?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think what happened in Utah is a good example. There is cost concerns depending on how we move forward. I think one of the things that the NASHBE group didn't fully understand was how the wholesaler process really works. Becoming our own wholesaler is a lot more costly venture than we think, and which is why we got the language added in, thanks to Senator Ayer, to contemplate other opportunities and vehicles to make this happen. But we had to kick the tire, so to speak, and get the ball moving so we could pursue the federal waiver, our certificate, rather, and get going. There's a way we can, and I think we found a way. There's ways we can do a program like this, and maybe even expand it a little bit further in other areas. And it's worth a look. And if that's what's going to come of this, then that's going to be great. And certainly, there's no safety issues. We have comparable counterparts to our friends at the North, so the drugs will be safe, and that's always a paramount to Vermont pharmacies and Vermont pharmacists and certainly the state legislature. So we want to make a pathway that's affordable, that's safe, and above all, is going to have some kind of lasting reform, and this is a great place to start.
That's Jeff Hochberg, president of the Vermont Retail Druggists Association. Jeff, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So what do insurance companies in the state think of this? Joining us now with one perspective is Jim Hopsicker, vice president of pharmacy at MVP Healthcare. He has a background as a retail pharmacist, and he worked for several years in the Medicaid program in New York State. Hi, Jim. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jane, for having me.
So as an insurer, what do you think of this plan?
Right now, MVP, you know, appreciates the effort that the Vermont legislature is taking, looking at pharmacy costs. As you know, it has been a key driver and does contribute up to almost 25% now of the cost of health insurance these days. And I think right now we would like to, you know, work with the state and continue to see the details that go into the plan to make sure that it is safe and can be an interoperable system within the healthcare system that we have.
Do you have concerns that it might not be safe?
Not safe, but in terms of integration into the clinical patient record. So right now, if a patient or a member goes to Canada, for example, for their personal use, that prescription does not get integrated into the patient's drug history. So any pharmacist or physician, unless will have to know that that person, or say Jim Hopsker, is getting drug A from Canada, because it will not be, any of that prescription history will not be seen within the system today.
And Senator Ayer, that's not really the way this bill would work, right? So if I, Jane Lindholm, am going to my pharmacy to pick up my medication, that's still going to be in the U.S. healthcare system, right?
Yes. It wouldn't look any different from the consumer's point of view. You'd go there and you'd say, either I want the one that's posted up there, my regular drug, or I want something else.
And Jim Hopsicker, is there any, as a consumer, you know, of course, if I'm thinking about this and thinking, okay, well, so, you know, lower cost sounds great. And I, you know, if I have insurance, then maybe it doesn't make that much of a difference to me, unless somehow the insurance agent might say, or my insurer might say, we're not going to cover this because we're not on board with this. Is there any chance that Vermont insurance companies might say, yeah, this is not going to fall within our guidelines, we're not covering these medications anymore?
These that would only be from, say, Canada, until I know the specific details, it's hard for me to answer, but I would say if it's cheaper for the consumer and cheaper overall and it's still high quality and within, you know, the integrated record, then I would say, it, you know, without knowing the full details, then I would say it would be fine. I mean, we have drugs in multiple tiers and in multiple coverages today. So to say, without knowing the specific drugs, I don't want to, you know, say something that might be misunderstood.
Yeah. We got a couple of notes from people who worry about this cost question, Senator Ayer. Tammy says it won't work. Canada has a quota deal with the drug companies, and they can't sell them to America. It's the same drug companies, and they're going to continue to stiff you. And Andrea says there will probably be a tariff placed on them that will increase the price. How will you guarantee that the Canadian wholesaler sells to the Vermont, you know, whether it's the state or whether you're contracting with a wholesaler, to get the same price that they get in Canada, you know, if they know it's coming to the U.S., why wouldn't they raise the price or have a different deal?
All true. I mean, it depends on a lot of things. But one of the issues we're looking at is anti-competitive behavior to see if we can threat. I mean, we're little Vermont. It might be hard for a group that spent $4 billion over the last 20 years in lobbying more than anybody else to think that they can't control things the way they want. But in terms of a tariff, that would be the pharmaceutical companies, I'm sure, would like to do that. But I can't imagine that any government would want to do that. So we'll see.
So, yeah. And then it would have to be the U.S. government imposing a trade tariff
on its own company. So I read a great story in the one of the Utah papers, and it was from a speech given by the fellow who presented the bill on the floor. And he said, imagine if you bought an Apple Watch, $329, he said it was, designed in the United States, manufactured in the United States, made by Americans, bought by Americans in America. And then you drove up to Canada and you bought the same watch for $23. And that, in fact, is the price difference between buying Humira, which is an asthma drug, I think, here, and buying it in Canada, $320-something for the drug here, $23 in Canada, made by Americans in America. So, I mean, we pay the freight. Americans pay the freight because we can and we will, and the government hasn't gotten itself together to say, oh, well, you can make money and you can have your patents, but here's the limit. Well, that's what other countries do. And we're not there yet. So this is bold. This is different. I was walking with Bernie Sanders in a parade the other day, and I said, can you help us? What can you do? And he said, are you ready to be bold? And sure I am. But, you know, why not? We don't have a lot to lose except for the work of the good people who try to put this program together and ask the feds to approve it. The national group, NASHP, is actually paying for a consultant or part of a consultant to do the federal whatever it is they do. It's a lot more complicated than mere mortals can imagine, apparently. But that effort, that money, we put it in the budget. We're good to go. And we just don't have that much to lose compared to the savings at no risk.
So, Jim Hopsicker, what do you think? I mean, you know, this is perhaps one step, and it remains to be seen how much it will save the state of Vermont, how much it will save insurance companies, how much it will save patients. But what else needs to be done? Senator Ayer talks about being bold. Where do you hope state or federal government is bold in containing costs?
I'm cautiously optimistic mm-hmm. about some of the things. You know, I'd like to see the details coming out of Washington. I think competition is going to be a key aspect of driving costs down. We've seen, especially in the pharmacy world, where as you start to have competition in terms of manufacturers with products, it definitely does drive down the price. I can tell you, historically, my days as a retail pharmacist, there are alternative drugs out there, but you need to have unfortunately, the right people knowing and asking the right questions. So, you know, my doctor prescribed X drug, you know, and then when you come and talk to the patient to say, you know, to warn them of the price, is there another option? For the patient, the pharmacist talks to the physician, and nowadays there's usually some options out there. So it's not necessarily just how much does it cost, but what are some of the options out there? Because there is now better awareness of the price of drugs, but it's still not fully known, all the options that are out there.
That's Jim Hopsicker, Vice President of Pharmacy at MVP Healthcare. Thanks for sharing your perspective with us, Jim.
Thank you.
Senator Ayer, do we have any sense of the timeline here when we might actually see this plan go into place? Should everything fall into line?
Sure. The plan, they're supposed to run, the agency runs the plan by the legislature in January of 19. By July, they're supposed to have applied for the federal certification and stand it up and go by January. You know, we make rules, we ask for things, and sometimes it can't happen that fast, and so we'll have to be flexible, and we have been in the past. But that's what we want.
That's Senator Claire Ayer representing Addison County in the State Senate. Thank you very much for talking with us today and sharing the details of this plan, how it might work for prescription drugs to be imported from Canada. Thank you.
You're welcome.